Open your Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 17, if you would, please. 1 Samuel chapter 17, we're finished with the book of Ephesians, and we're going to do a little bit different kind of preaching now for a while. And for me, some of the most enjoyable preaching in the world is biographical preaching, where you take the story of a man in the Bible and draw conclusions from it. So this will be fun for me, and I hope it will be for you too. We're going to talk today about one of my favorite Bible stories. I think one of the first stories that kids can say makes a person one of their Bible heroes is the story of David and Goliath. And so we're going to talk about that this morning. First Samuel chapter 17, and about the story there. Read with me following along in verses 1 through about verse 11. And I won't make you read with me out loud because these are some hard words, but follow along best you can. Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle and were gathered together at Shoco, which belongeth to Judah, and pitched between Shoco and Azekah in Ephes Damum. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. One of the commentators said this was like being in a great amphitheater with bleachers on either side. And the battle took place in the valley, and both sides, the Philistines on one side and the Israelites on the other, could see everything that took place in the battle. And it was necessary for two reasons, because on this day, God is going to magnify David. And because God is going to magnify David, it is necessary that all of the warriors of Israel see that, because he one day will be their king. And it's also necessary that all of the enemies of God see that, because one day he will be their conqueror, and they need to understand that. So it's a kind of a tremendous setting here. And they're in the valley of Elah. Now, there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. Commentators disagree on how much that was. The least I have ever read is 9 feet 4 inches. I have read an estimate at least as much as 12 feet. That all depends upon what you measure a cubit to be. But normally a cubit was 18 inches, the distance between the elbow and the tip of the middle finger. And so ever how much that was, you know, and I suppose there could be a little relativity there. You know, if a guy stood 6'8" and he had 24 inches between the tip of his finger and the elbow, then to him a cubit would be 24 inches. But to the average guy, it was 18 inches. And so we go on and we see that Goliath was a huge man. Any way you slice it, if he was 9 feet and David was 6 feet, he was 50% taller than David was. You know, he was half again as big. That's a pretty big guy. You know, it kind of means this, that if people were betting on you, the odds would lean toward the opposition. You know, Las Vegas, is it Vegas where they do all the betting? If they were going to lay odds on you and put out numbers on you, they would say that the other guy had a 50% better chance of winning. Not only that, but he was older, he was more experienced, he was bigger, he was stronger, he was coated with brass and David wasn't. So there were a lot of odds. Probably the odds would have been more than 2-1. It would have probably been 5-1 in Goliath's favor or more. And so we see the helmet and the armor of the man described beginning in verse 5. He had a helmet of brass upon his head. He was armed with a coat of mail. The weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. I'm not sure how heavy that is, but about 120 pounds, we're told. He had greaves of brass upon his legs and target of brass between his shoulders. The staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron. And one bearing a shield went before him. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, "Why are you come out to set your battle in array? Am I not a Philistine, and ye servants of Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us." By the way, that was a lie. How do you know that was a lie? Because later on, when David did kill the giant, the Philistines did not throw down their weapons and surrender. Instead, they ran with their weapons to regather and fight on another day. So this whole episode here is a lie. He's offering them what you might call surrender with honor. You know, if I kill your champion, then you guys surrender. But it's one of those one-way street type things, because if you would happen to kill the Philistine champion, we're all going to run, regroup, and fight again another day. By the way, the Philistines here have been beaten twice in a row by Israel, and they have a reason now to face them again. Back in the early chapters of 1 Samuel, they had defeated Israel and had stolen away the Ark of the Covenant and the Ten Commandments. You remember that. Then in about chapter 7, under a prayer of Samuel, they defeated, by providential means, they defeated the Philistines. And the last time they fought them in chapter 14, they defeated them again. That's when Jonathan had one sword and went in and overturned a garrison of the Philistines and defeated them. So the Israelites have had two recent victories since that big defeat when they lost the Ark. And I just want you to understand that the Philistines have been beaten two in a row, and they don't want to get beat again. Well, why are they setting their battle in array now? Because word has got out that Saul's off in the head. When your king gets off in the head, that's an opportune time for the enemy to make a challenge, because the king's not right. He's not thinking right. He's not all there. He's been troubled in his spirit. They've had to call in a special harpist to play for him. The guy's off in the head. Now's a good time to tackle them. And so we see the Philistines are set in order. Notice the challenge. Choose you a man for you and let him come down to me. Look in verse 9. He gives the challenge. Verse 10. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. And when Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. And so we're just going to kind of quickly go through the story here, and then I want to give you some thoughts about this. In verse 12, we're introduced to David. We've been introduced to the giant. By the way, you should know this about the difference between the Philistines and the Israelites. I never understood this until some months ago when I watched this little DVD presentation of the studies of the Promised Land. But the Philistines were the civilized people here. We're always presented that the Philistines were pagans and heathens, and we believe that because they were idolaters. But the truth is, they were far more advanced in their civilization and culture than the Hebrews were. The Hebrews had not yet learned how to work with iron. They didn't know how to make steel. They didn't know how to make... They had one sword among them. You say, well, how'd they fight wars with billy clubs and rocks and fists? They'd throw things. But they didn't have the use of, they didn't know how to make armor. The Philistines had mastered the art of making brass and iron weapons. The Israelites had none. So who do you think was going to be the winner most of the time? Unless there was some kind of a providential interference, the Philistines are going to win 10 out of 10. And the two times that the Israelites won, it was because of divine interference. It's because God overwhelmed the enemy in behalf of Israel. But I want you to understand, the Philistines lived down on the plains near the Red Sea, and it was through those plains that people passed back and forth from Egypt to Babylon. And so they were acquainted with the sharpest and the brightest people in the world. They were acquainted with all of the latest technical advances of society, and the Jews lived up in the mountains. The Israelites lived up in the mountains of Judea. They didn't understand much about what was taking place there. And so they were greatly disadvantaged in most every way. They didn't have chariots with wheels on them. I mean, you know, there's just a lot. They had not yet learned to be an artificer of iron or brass or steel or any other of those weapons. They had to fight with rocks and sticks. And so they were greatly disadvantaged. But we see now David is introduced in verse 12. And I like this phrase in verse 12. David was then the son of the Ephrathite of Bethlehem of Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had eight sons. Listen to what it says about David's dad. And the old man, or the man, went among men for an old man in the days of Saul. If he'd have been doing that funeral director, that funeral business the other day, he would have had those people out of there in 10 minutes. Amen? He would have been on top of it. He went among men as an old man in the days of Saul. The three eldest sons of Jesse, well, they were warriors in the army. And we were told in verse 16, the Philistines drew near morning and evening. And then in verses 17, Jesse says to David, take now to thy brethren an ephah of parched corn and 10 loaves, and run to the camp to thy brethren, take these cheeses to the captain, and so forth. Verse 20, David rose up early in the morning, left the sheep with the keeper, took and went, and did what Jesse had commanded him to do. Verse 22, David left his carriage and ran to the keeper of left the carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage and ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren. They were just coming back from battle. It happened providentially that morning that David arrived right in the middle of a battle scene. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. And they said, man, have you ever seen such a dude in your whole life? You ever seen such a big guy? And they went on and on. And so David begins to inquire in verse 26. David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is it? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of God? The people answered him after this manner, saying, so shall be done to the man that killeth him. And so David is beginning to find out what is going on here and what needs to be done, what he could do to help. His brother Eliab comes and rebukes him. And we see that in verse 28. He says, why came thou hither? And with whom have thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride, the naughtiness of thine heart. You're come to see the battle and so forth. And then David utters that famous line, is there not a cause? And we've heard dozens of sermons on that in our life. Is there not a cause? And he turned from him toward another and spake after the same manner, and the people after him and so forth. And he's delivered then to Saul. In verse 32, David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight this Philistine. And when remember how it was that Saul said to David, thou art not able to go against the Philistine to fight with, to go against the Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. David said, and he told him about the bear, and he told him about the lion, and how he had killed the bear and the lion, and he said, and this Goliath, this giant, will be just like that bear and that lion, who, and he's defied the armies of the living God. God will deliver him into my hand. And verse 12, David says very plainly, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion, out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said unto David, go, and the Lord be with thee. He's convinced. David knows what he's talking about. David has the faith to do this. David believes that he can do this. So then we have this idea that Saul says, but you need some armor. So Saul brings out all of his armor. Now, remember this, Saul was head and shoulders above all of the other men in Israel. So Saul was a tall man himself. Now you tell me, who was the likely candidate to go out and fight and kill Goliath? Who should have been the guy getting on his horse and going down there and fighting him? The biggest guy in the army was Saul. He had nobody bigger to send. And so what do you think his armor is going to do to David, who's just an older teenage boy? I believe David was probably about 17 or 18 years old here. David's probably hadn't put on that middle age spread yet. You know, he didn't have to wear those blue jeans that are a skosh fuller in the places where you need them. You know, he hadn't quite matured to that point yet. He probably still weighed about 165 pounds. He probably had a 32 waist, a 32 inseam, probably wore a medium t-shirt. And Saul hands him his armor and says, here, you can't go to battle without some armor. So David tries it on. He says, I can't go with these. I haven't proved them. He took them off. Verse 40, he took his staff in his hand and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook and put them in the shepherd's bag which he had, even in a scrip, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. Verse 41, the Philistine came down, drew near to David. The man that bare the shield went before him. The Philistine looked about and saw David and disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy and of a fair countenance. The Philistine, by the way, is offended at this challenger. What are you sending? You sending a kid with a bag full of rocks to fight a warrior? That's insulting. What am I, a dog, that you're going to scare me off with rocks? You're going to throw rocks at me like you would throw a rock at a dog? And then he cursed David by his gods in verse 43. In verse 44, the Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air, to the beasts of the field." Then said David to the Philistine, this is my favorite part in the whole chapter, "Thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom, by the way, thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth, not with the sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." And then David ran forward, the scripture says, and he took one of those stones and slung it and hit the giant in the forehead. And hit him so hard with the stone in the forehead that it sunk into his forehead. And he went down unconscious. And David ran up and cut off his head, gave it to Saul. But the children of Israel then charged. They were now encouraged, and they charged down their side of the mountain into the valley, just as the other Philistines were running up the hill, and Israel chased many of them down and slew many of them that day. Well, would you like to find out, how do you kill a giant? How do you beat a giant? I was thinking about this, and the giant looked at David, and he mocked him, made fun, because he was covered with brass. David wasn't covered with brass. David had on no armor, and yet David had armor the giant couldn't see. Last week in Ephesians chapter 6, we talked about spiritual armor for spiritual warfare. David was girded with the girdle of truth. David was not only girded with that girdle of truth, he had on the breastplate of righteousness, and he had on the shoes of the gospel, and he had on the shield of faith, and he had on the helmet of salvation, and he had in his hand a sword that couldn't be seen. It was the sword of the Spirit, the Word of God, and he also had prayer at his disposal. I want you to understand, David did not go into this battle unarmed. And you know, sometimes people are not what you take them for, because what you see is not always what you get. Sometimes you see some ruddy, scrawny youth and you think, oh, this guy's going to get eaten alive. And in the end, he wins the battle because he was armed in armor that you can't see. Goliath's big problem was is he only fought what he could see. And he failed to understand that there's armor that one can have that cannot be seen with the naked human eye. Well, let me give you some steps on how to kill a giant here. How do you beat a giant? David did little things well. That's point number one. He did little things well. He was faithful. He was faithful as a shepherd. The reason he turned out to be a great soldier and a great king is because he started out being a great shepherd. He was a messenger. His father sent him with messages, and he was faithful with those messages. And as a faithful messenger, one day he's going to be a faithful king. So he was faithful. Not only that, he was diligent. He rose up early. He didn't wait till the day was far advanced. You know, if David would have been 10 minutes later, if he would have been just a little later when he arrived, he would have missed the giant's speech. Do you know what it was that fired the heart of David to stand up for God that day? It was hearing Goliath, the blowhard, give that speech in the valley. Had he been 10 minutes later, he had just a window. He had to be there at exactly the right time. If he'd have been early, he might have been there and gone. If he'd have been late, he would have missed it. But he was there exactly at the moment that the giant made his blowhard speech. And I want you to understand, that's what fired the heart of David to defeat the giant. So he rose up early. He was timely. He was zealous. He ran. I see four or five times in the chapter when his father told him to take these supplies to the camp. He ran to the camp with those supplies. He ran. In verse 17, he ran to the camp. In verse 22, he ran into the army to meet his brethren. In verse 48 and in verse 51, he ran down to meet Goliath. Most guys would have moseyed around, taken all day, hoping that Goliath would tire of waiting on him. But David ran to the challenge. David was zealous. And not only that, David was trained. I want you to understand, he had practiced with his harp so that when the king needed to hear a skilled musician play, David was ready. And David, I want you to understand, David hadn't just begun playing with that sling. It wasn't something that he picked up one afternoon and says, well, I wonder if I can hit that bird over on that tree limb with the stone out of the sling. He hits the bird once and says, yeah, I'm pretty good with this. So he starts wearing it on his hip as a weapon. You think it was like that? No, I think while those sheep were out there grazing, I think the whole hillside of Judea was covered with rocks. And he was practicing. Somehow or other, people get the idea that, you know, if God is going to bless me, then I don't need to practice and I don't need to prepare. Yeah, I'll just trust the Lord. You know what? God seldom ever uses a person that doesn't have the character to practice and prepare. He seldom ever uses a person that's not faithful. He seldom ever uses a person that's not diligent. He seldom ever uses a person that's not zealous. If you would be a man of God or a woman of God, you must start as a youth being faithful to the task. And you must learn to do the little things well. Here's the second thing. David did little things well. Number two, David began defending the reputation of God at an early age. You know, the fact that David got so insulted over what this giant said, I don't think it was the first time David had took a stand for the Lord. Just the way he said it with the confidence, who does this guy think he is? You know, I'm not taking this off of some little shepherd on the backside, you know, some little shepherd with an attitude on the backside of a Judean hill on the hills, you know, that are adjoining my father's property. I'm out there herding my sheep and this little guy defies God. I'm not taking it off of him. I'm not dead sure not going to take it off this giant. I think David had been standing for the Lord for a while. Number three, David counted the cost. He said, what shall be done to the man who killeth this Philistine? Now, I'm not sure what David was thinking here. Some of the scholars think that David was trying to find out if he would be punished or rewarded. One guy thought David was seeking to pad his pockets here. Wonder what the reward is for the guy that kills this giant. I kind of took it for years that David was afraid that he would be up for capital punishment if he went and killed the giant. What'll be done to the guy that kills this? You know, done to sounds like chastised to me. What'll be done to you or to the guy? But one of the commentators, I think, probably is right. David was really trying to find out if anyone else had tried. What'll be done to the guy that kills this guy? Has anyone else even tried? And, of course, no one had. Here's number four. David ignored his critics. He did little things well. He defended the reputation of God. He counted the cost. He ignored his critics. Here comes his brother Eliab. And Eliab says, why have you come down hither? With whom have thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? This is verse 28, by the way. I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thy heart, for thou art come down to see, that thou mightest see the battle. I want to say this about Eliab's criticism. First of all, it was false. David was there under instructions from his father. And if, you know, one guy said that if Eliab would have shut up, asked the first question and shut up and waited for David to give the answer, when he asked David, why camest thou down hither? If he would have been quiet and let David answer, he would have said, I'm here to bring you supplies. My dad ordered me to bring you supplies, you big oaf. And he might not have had... He might not have taken the opportunity then to issue more criticism, but he didn't even wait for David to answer. The criticism was false. It was belittling. With whom have you left those few sheep? Like, that's not a very important job. There aren't even very many sheep there. He was belittling him. He was judgmental. I know the pride of thy heart. How do you know the pride of anybody's heart? Yeah, I mean, you can guess. But you're really not real wise to go making statements based upon what you think somebody's thinking in their heart. If you think somebody has pride in their heart, you're best to be quiet about it. but Eliab was judgmental and he was immature. The truth was, he was insulted because he was a coward and afraid to go fight the giant himself, and here was his little brother who was half his age and much smaller by size, and he's willing to go do what the big men are afraid to do. So he's immature. Even Saul criticized him later. He said, "Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth." Now, I want you to understand, it was not scornful counsel, or it was not scornful criticism, but his criticism was discouraging. I want to tell you, young people, that the world is full of people who will step up to you when they hear your dreams and hear your wishes and hear your desires for your future life, and they'll say, "That'll never work." And if you look at them real close, in many cases, they're men and women who've tried nothing themselves their whole life. How do you know till you try? Listen, young people, some young person says, "I think God wants me to go." I remember when Michael was talking about going to the Solomon Islands. All I said was, "Michael, you'd better really study that. That's going to cost a lot of money to go there. That's halfway around the world. I mean, that's actually all the way on the other side of the world. The Solomon Islands, it was like $3,000 for a plane ticket for one person." I said, "That's going to be an expensive place to serve." But I never once said, "You can't do that. You'll never make it. You can't do that. That's not possible to do." God pity parents that throw cold water on the dreams of their children before they even have an opportunity to reach out and try. Many times the most negative prognosticators are those that have done nothing with their own life. So let's not be too discouraging on our youth. A young man says, "I want to be president of the United States." Say, "Well, at least if you're going to do that, be a good one." Not like the long list of those that we've seen pass through the office. If you're going to do that, you need to start. Here's what I'd tell a young person. "I want to be president of the United States someday." Well, you'd better start now. What's your grades in English like? What are your grades in history like? "Well, I'm making a C in history." Well, if you're going to be president of the United States one day, you need to have better grades in history. One of the problems, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, that we've had is that several of our presidents do not know a lot about history. Many of the leaders of our country have forgotten that this is a Christian nation and was founded on Christian principles. They have been separated from the history of the founding of our nation. If you're going to be president of the United States, I don't want to hear that unless you make an A in history. I want to hear you make an A in history. I want to hear you make an A in English. I want to hear you make an A in math. And then you know what? I'll buy your first campaign poster. I'll help you all the way, but you got to start now doing the right things. But don't say to him, "You can't do that. You'll never make it." Don't say that. Choke on those words. Choke them back. You say, "Well, I know him. I don't care." Choke him back. Don't throw cold water on a young man with a dream. He ignored his critics. Here's the next thing. David focused on a cause. His cause was twofold. He wanted to honor the name of God. And number two, he wanted to encourage the armies of Israel. Do you know what it did to this young man's heart when he saw the Israelites fleeing from the battle that day? You know, listen, we have to thank the Lord for the warriors that the United States of America have sent out. They don't run. Those guys stay and fight when whole positions are overrun. Until they receive the command to run, they don't run. They'll stay till the death. But what would you feel like one day if you heard that a whole platoon or a whole group of American military ran, threw their weapons down and ran for their lives? What would you be proud to be an American that day? No, I wouldn't either. And that's what David saw that day, and it broke his heart. And he said, somebody's got to inspire the hearts of these men. They're good men, but somebody's got to lead the way. Somebody's got to inspire them. Somebody has to defend the honor of God, and somebody has to encourage the armies. Here's the next thing. David called upon previous experience. He wasn't very old, but listen, he had some experience. Age doesn't have a lot to do with experience. I'll tell you what has a lot to do with experience is paying attention. Lots of people could have more experience than they have if they just open their eyes up and pay attention. But they haven't paid attention to mistakes that they made in their life. They haven't paid attention to successes. Listen, when you have a success, you need to back up and say, what happened there? What did I do to make that work? And when you fail, you need to back up and say, what did I do to goof that up? And that's how you gain experience, by paying attention. What made that work? What caused that not to work? David says, you know, I've got a little experience. I've been in the battle before. Saul says, you're just a youth, and he's been a warrior from his youth. David said, I bet he hadn't killed a bear. Bet he hadn't killed a lion. And if you'll look at David's recollection of this story, one of them he killed with his bare hands. Think of that. 165, 5'10", medium-sized t-shirt, 32-32 inseam. And waist, and he killed, and as I perceive what happened, he had thrown the rock, hit the lion, knocked the lion out. He thought the lion was dead, and he went to retrieve the lamb from the lion's mouth. And as he was retrieving the lamb from the lion's mouth, the lion comes too. Yeah, I don't think he'd planned on that. That'd be a little shocking, wouldn't it? Just as you lift the old lion's mouth open to get the lamb out. And the lion goes, roar. Oh, my goodness. What am I going to do now? Whatever the Lord lays on your heart. And, you know, he did the only thing he could. He grabbed the lion and killed him barehanded. I'll bet Goliath hadn't killed a lion barehanded. Listen, I know a little bit about battle. I've been there before. He called upon previous experience. Here's the next thing. David refused ungodly advice or machinery. Saul gave him counsel. Here's the guy that's afraid to go to battle. And he says, now you're going to have some armor. Nobody goes to, no self-respecting soldier in my army goes to battle without armor. And we don't have any extra to fit you, so you're going to have to wear mine here. And David says, you know what? Now here's the ungodly Saul. Here's the Saul who God has said, I'm going to take the kingdom away from you. Twice God has told him, I'm taking the kingdom away from you because you refuse to carry out my orders. You will not obey my word. The kingdom is gone. And here's Saul, ungodly Saul, God-forsaken Saul, telling David how to fight a battle. Listen, I want to say to the young people today, young people, the world is full of people that will tell you how to fight your battles. Before you take any advice, you wait and see how they're doing. Back up and take a good look at their life and say, is this a godly man? Is this a man who's refused to go to the battle himself? He's never been in a good spiritual battle in his whole life. What's he trying to tell me how to fight this battle for? You know what? I think I could get godly counsel somewhere else better. David refused to take ungodly advice. Here's the next thing. He chose his weapons well. Some guys think he got 5 stones. In case he missed, he'd have 4 more shots. I personally believe it was because Goliath had 4 brothers. And David figured, before this is over, I'm going to end up fighting a whole family. I'm going to be ready for him. But what I really like is this, is he was very particular about the stones that he picked. He only picked 5, but he got round, smooth, perfectly balanced stones. Why? So the flight would be true. Why? Because his accuracy depended upon the right weapon. Let me say this. I think a wise Christian not only chooses his weapons well, but he chooses his battles well too. You know, there's battles that I have gone past in my life because they were not winnable battles. You look at it and you say, at this moment and this time in history, this is not a battle that can be won. Choose your battles carefully. But when you do, when God does lead you to take on a battle, you make sure you choose your weapons carefully too. David, as I said earlier, had the armor of truth, the breastplate of righteousness, shoes of the gospel, sword, the shield of faith, the helmet of salvation, the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, and prayer. He was clothed in the armor of God. You couldn't see it with the naked eye, but it was there just the same. Chose his weapons well. Here's the next thing. David ignored the intimidation of the enemy. I want you to get this, young people. Goliath scrutinized this youth as he's on his way up there. Do you know that the lost people in the world scrutinize the youth of Christ? They look at you. And they say, this guy claims to be a Christian. I don't see it. You know what this grizzled veteran warrior despised about David? Is that he was young and clean cut. That he was manly, but you could tell by his appearance that he was pure, that he loved the Lord. Don't kid yourself for a minute, young people. The world can look at you and right off the bat, they can tell who you are. You don't have to march up. 9 times out of 10, you don't have to march up and say, I'm a Christian. They can tell by your appearance. They can tell by your demeanor. They can tell by your attitude. They can tell by your no, sir, and your yes, sir. And the world sizes you up. And people that do not love the Lord right away disdain you. They don't like you. You know why? Because your presence is a conviction to them. And that's true in life. He scorned him. He intimidated him, tried to intimidate him. He scorned his youth. He scorned his size. He scorned his appearance and his experience. I just want to remind you of this, that the size of a man is not determined in feet and inches and pounds, but by what it takes to stop him. You know, if you stood Goliath side by side with David, it looks like Mutt and Jeff. You know, it's really a huge contrast. But don't measure David by how tall he is. He may be 5'10". He may weigh 165 pounds, but don't measure him that way. Measure him by what obstacle he can overcome. Now, who overcame that day? Goliath did. So who's the biggest man? You see, big isn't in size. Big is in faith. Big is in honor. Big is in righteousness. Listen, a bigger man is the guy that'll bow his head in the lunchroom, at the factory, or at the college, who will bow his head and say his prayers while others mock him. That's the biggest man there. The biggest man there is the one who can control his temper and control his tongue and bring himself under the subjection of the Spirit. That's a far bigger man than a guy with big biceps who can bench press 400 pounds. That kind of thing doesn't impress God, and it shouldn't impress you either. The size of a man's determined by what it takes to stop him. David battled for the right reasons. That's the next thing. How do you beat a giant? You battle for the right reasons. He wasn't battling to have his name put in the paper. He didn't care if he made the evening news. He didn't care if he received promotion. All he wanted was God's name not to be defied. And he wanted to encourage the armies of Israel. He intended to inspire Israel to greater promotion or to devotion. He intended to promote God's name among the nations. He intended to defend God's reputation. He fought for the right reasons. Here's the next thing. How do you beat a giant? David gave God credit in advance for the victory. Four statements I see here. Number one, he said, this day will the Lord deliver thee into my hand. Next, that all the earth may know that there's a God in Israel. Next, all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with the sword and spear. For next, the battle is the Lord's and he will give you into our hands. Four different statements David makes just to make sure there's no misunderstanding about who wins this battle. It wasn't David, it was the Lord. Here's the next thing. David finished the job. You know, lots of people could be better warriors for the Lord if they just finished what they started. You say, what are you talking about? David finished the job. Well, David hit him in the forehead with the stone and knocked him unconscious, but he didn't quit there. You see, I think David had learned a lesson on that lion. You remember he'd thrown the stone, hit the lion, knocked the lion down. The lamb was still in the lion's mouth, and David goes up to get the snoot of the lion and release the lamb, and the lion comes too. David's thinking, I don't want this bruiser coming too on me when I go to walk away. He's not going to come too. Time I'm done with him, he'll never come too again. But he didn't have a sword. So he pulled the sword out of the giant sheath and used his own sword to cut off his head. He finished the job. You know, there's a lot of athletic teams that talk about the killer instinct. There's lots of teams that stay ahead the whole game, but they can't win because they don't have that killer instinct to put it away. David had the instinct to put it away. And then David acknowledged the authority of the king. He delivered the head to Saul. He didn't take the, you know what? He didn't take the head home. He didn't take the armor home. He didn't even take the sword home. He used the sword to cut off the head. And the sword, if you remember, ended up in a village with the priests of Nob. David didn't get any souvenirs that day because David wanted to make sure that this is not my victory. This is Saul's victory. He's the authority that gave me the right to go fight this battle. So he acknowledged the authorities that be. And that's how you kill a giant. Now let me close with this. You stand in the valley today. You stand in the valley of decision. You are facing giants today. Different men face different giants. Some men face the giant of the fear of man. Some of you live in fear of what somebody's going to say or what somebody's going to do or what your boss is going to say. You live in fear of men. That's a giant. Some young people have bad company and that becomes a giant to you. The wrong crowd can be a terrible giant in your life. Some older people have doubts about the future. Will my Social Security and my pension be enough? What's going to happen when the Social Security Administration goes broke? It's been predicted to go broke for the last 20 years, and they've borrowed from it and stolen from it. And what's going to happen one day? What's going to happen to me when I get old? Will there be enough to go around? Others have giants to fight, like the lust of the flesh, the love of the world, worldly habits. Some may even have an addiction. Others fight spiritual powers. Some maybe fight the devil himself, but there's giants in every life. Or perhaps here's the biggest giant in your life. It's some unsaved soul that you know you should go take the rock of the gospel and fire at them. There's some unsaved soul that you would love to bring down for Jesus Christ. You'd love to see that unsaved soul become a Christian, but you're like the soldiers of Israel. You run every time they bark because they have a big, bad bark, and their personality scares you to death. And you won't get close enough to hand them a gospel tract. I've wondered what would have happened that day if David would have walked right up to the giant and said, here's a gospel tract, tell you how to go to heaven when you die. You got a problem with that? You guys need to wake up. We're going to give an invitation here in a minute. I wonder what would have happened if he'd have walked up and said, Goliath, do you know? Have you been reconciled to God? Have your sins been forgiven? Well, I don't know if David would have. I think I'd rather stand back and throw a rock at him. Do you know, to some of you, that's the way witnessing is. It is as fearsome as if you would have had to gone out against that giant, because you say, well, preacher, look, that person that I really have a burden for, they are armed with brass. They have armor of philosophies. They have armor of religion. They have armor of good works. They've taken refuge in a refuge of lies. They'll never listen to me. Oh, my goodness, I can't go out there and fight them. I can't go give them a gospel witness. That would be like David against Goliath. Maybe that's your giant. Some unsaved soul that one day, by the way, is going to die, and unaided by your help or mine, without Christ, without the forgiveness of sins, they will go to hell when they die. And it'll be because you looked and saw their brass armor and ran like a scared Israelite. My friend, you need, and I need, to learn some lessons from little David and go challenge the giant. And remember, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. Was Saul of Tarsus not Goliath to Stephen and to others? they looked at Saul of Tarsus and said, "Oh my goodness, what a big guy he is." But listen, when he fell to the gospel of Jesus Christ, how hard did he fall? He fell so hard he turned the world upside down. And then I want to give you this thought. Who's your giant? What are the giants that you're facing today? And then let me say this. Christ the champion defeated the Philistines of sin for me. And because he won, I can have victory too. Christ is my champion. The idea that the giant had was, is that I'll fight for all my men. And one of you will fight for all of your men. And whoever's the champion, all of those guys win. Do you not understand? That's exactly what God did in Jesus Christ. He said, Jesus Christ is the champion. If he wins on the cross of Calvary, if he wins by raising from the grave, if he wins, then all who repent and believe win too. Blessed be God. I repented and believed when I was 9 years old. And I have victory because Jesus, my champion, had victory on Calvary's cross and coming out of the tomb there in Jerusalem. Would you bow your heads with me, please, for prayer?